Hi, I'm Michael Wright.
And I'm Katie Gossett.
Welcome to a bonus edition of White Silence. We're calling it that because we released a bonus episode on November the 28th to mark the day of the 40th anniversary of the Erebus disaster. And that had stories we'd collected since the podcast was released or that we couldn't fit anywhere else. This bonus episode is a little bit different again. If you followed the news about Erebus, and if you listen to this podcast, hopefully you have, you would have heard, on the 28th of November, New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern say something pretty significant.
After 40 years, on behalf of today's government, the time has come to apologise for the actions of an airline, then in full state ownership, which ultimately caused the loss of the aircraft and the loss of those you loved. This apology is wholehearted and wide-reaching. We will never know your grief, but I know the time has come to say I'm sorry.
The New Zealand government and Air New Zealand apologised for the Erebus disaster. This was a pretty momentous step. It was something we talked about ourselves in episode 6, that Air New Zealand had clearly made mistakes that contributed to the crash, and an apology for that was sorely needed so that people, especially the families of the victims, could really move on from what happened. This apology was not expected, and it was a big deal. The government was accepting the findings of the Mann report and clearly saying the pilots weren't to blame for the crash. We really felt like we had to do something to acknowledge it, so we spoke to Jacinda Ardern.
I read all of the statements made at the time that the Mann report was finally tabled in Parliament in 1999, and it all built a picture for me of unfinished business, and that wasn't right.
We'll have that interview for you soon, but first we want to talk a little bit about the news of the apology, because it was genuinely surprising to a lot of people. Maria Collins, you'll remember she's the widow of the captain of flight TE901, Jim Collins. Maria sent me an email on the morning of November the 28th, the anniversary. And in that, she wrote, "In a century or two, there will be an apology from the airline, but it's too painful to do so in our lifetime." Well, later that day, that apology arrived. One of our producers, Justin Gregory, spoke to Maria Collins and started off asking her about that.
So you had no idea the apology was coming?
None whatsoever. In fact, I'd cynically said that we'd be long dead and buried before anybody would come up with the word apology, and it would come in 100 years' time or something like that.
When did you sense that an apology might be coming?
I had no sense whatsoever until sitting in that marquee and listening to the niceties that are always said with these occasions, and suddenly she came out with this, and then followed immediately by the chairperson of the Air New Zealand board, that they each extended an apology, and I was totally taken aback. I couldn't really believe my ears.
Yeah, what made you think it was so impossible?
Well, it's easier to apologise when you've had nothing whatsoever to do with it, so that there's not a hint of guilt and you can blandly forgive the sins of the forefathers, as it were, because you had nothing to do with it yourself.
Justin did this interview with Maria Collins in Auckland a couple of weeks after the anniversary. And listening to it, the next thing she said kind of surprised me. You would have heard on this podcast Maria Collins talking about the pain of her husband being blamed for the crash in the Chippendale report back in 1980 and the lingering effects that had on the family. Well, when Justin asked her if it was a good feeling to hear the apology, this is what she said.
Well, it doesn't change anything, Justin, does it?
No.
Maybe the history books will now say that on the 28th of November 2019, an official apology was extended by the Prime Minister at the time and the chairperson of Air New Zealand, but it doesn't change anything, and you will have read the letters to the editor and the comments in the daily paper are just as vicious, vindictive, or calming and apologetic as they always have been.
The Prime Minister was unequivocal, though. That surprised me when I was listening to it.
Yeah, she was. But as I say, we've known that. But having said, right, well, it wasn't his fault, my husband's fault. doesn't change anything further, and that he doesn't come down from a silver cloud and say, well, now that I'm forgiven, I can come and live amongst you again. Doesn't work like that.
So Maria Collins was happy about the apology, but not jubilant, and she wasn't alone here. We also spoke to Margarita Mann. She's the widow of Justice Peter Mann, the Royal Commissioner who found the crash was entirely Air New Zealand's fault, not the pilot's, and that the airline had tried to cover up its mistakes. When Jacinda Ardern apologised, she said the government 100% accepted Mann's findings. Margarita lives in Auckland too, so we sent Justin to see her to ask what she thought about those words.
It was by chance that I heard, because a young relative from out of town had texted my daughter and said, hooray, hurrah, and so forth. We said, what's this about? And my daughter happened to have called in. We turned my little iPad on and this speech came up. And I sat back in my chair and it was unexpected, yes. And I thought that's really nice.
So you were invited to the event on the 28th, but you decided not to go.
I don't normally go to any function on that date because I regard it as belonging to the relatives of the people who died and nothing to do with the commission. Yes, that's their day. Ours came later.
There are people who see Peter as one of the victims of the crash. You don't quite agree.
Don't know how to answer that. I suppose I could say he had choices. But he was treated badly.
That bad treatment, as you'll no doubt know, stemmed from one specific part of Mann's report. It was the part Air New Zealand challenged in court that was overturned and which ultimately led to Mann resigning as a judge. The orchestrated litany of lies.
It was one sentence only. And that sentence came about because there were lawyers at the commission representing Air New Zealand, and he had got to know that they could present more than they were doing. And it annoyed him because they knew better. He said they were taking me for a fool, which I'm not. So he was a man of words. From a little boy, he'd kept books of words that he came across and phrases and so on. And so he felt that he had to express that annoyance, and so he chose those particular words. He used several dictionaries while he was putting the phrase together to be sure that they expressed the right matters. So that's how that sentence came about, and then it went round the world.
What would Peter have thought of the apology now?
He would have thought it was gracious, but 40 years too late. Yes.
It was also too late for David Nicholson's parents. You'll remember David from the podcast. His sister Christine, a young teacher, died in the crash. Their parents were quiet, private people who didn't speak of the tragedy outside the family, but followed every detail of the disaster and all the controversies that followed.
I think that they deserved to hear the apology. They had read widely all the evidence and analysis that had gone on around the accident. They firmly believe that Justice Mann and the Commission had spoken truth to power, and that the ultimate cause of the accident was in line with Mann's findings, that ultimately Air New Zealand had been responsible at the time for not briefing their pilots on changes to the navigation course. they would have felt that the voice of the small people had been heard, I think.
As for David, well, he'd never really been to any of these official commemoration things before and didn't quite know what to expect. But because we'd approached him to be on White Silence, he decided, on behalf of his parents, to go along after 40 years and bring his children. And maybe it explained some things for them too.
Well, it fills in a bit of history for them, you know, and as to the level of controversy that followed the event and the fact that my parents had always been very sad and quiet about those events. I think also I felt very close to my parents and sister during the event. It was nicely done and well presented, and it gave us the opportunity for reflection. And in that reflection, I felt very close to them.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories, or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read From Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read From Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.
Around the time of the anniversary, we heard from the Prime Minister's office that Jacinda Ardern was available to talk to us about the Erebus disaster and her apology. We said, sure, but Prime Minister's schedules being what they are, she wasn't available for a couple of weeks, so we settled on December the 10th for an interview. On December the 9th, another tragedy befell New Zealand when the volcano Whakaari White Island erupted while dozens of tourists were on a trip there. At the time of recording, 16 people had died and many more were still critically injured in hospital. It was appalling, and of course our interview was off. But the next day, the Prime Minister was back from Whakatāne and had some time. Here's Mike talking with Jacinda Ardern.
I was standing up.
Oh, yeah. That's tough.
No, I didn't want to cancel because I wanted things to be fresh in my mind. I didn't want to forget anything. So,
okay, yeah, fair enough.
Recent, this way I can be assured that I will give you as accurate a reflection of events as I can.
Cool. I can hear squeaking.
That's just someone
that's
bringing
tables
in a
moving.
Closet. Thank you, Jane. Right.
Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, thank you for joining us here. Why now? What prompted this?
The memorial, you know, this was, I still remember not long after coming into office, there being a conversation about the fact that the 40th anniversary was looming and still we were a nation without a formal national memorial on our shores. And that begged the question, why not? And I remember reading some of the positioning pieces, people advocating for a memorial and just thinking that it just made no sense to me. So I had, as a new Prime Minister, some conversations with the Deputy Prime Minister and others, and very quickly felt compelled to commit us to the process of establishing a memorial. Now, in my mind, that felt like something that we should be able to do relatively quickly. Of course, I hadn't had experience in developing memorials and the work that they do take. And those who did within the Ministry of Arts, Culture and Heritage said, look, you know, involving families, involving people who are and will be interested in the design and making sure it's in keeping and captures their views and reflects their sentiment, that's going to take time. And so one of those really important steps in developing the memorial was to meet family members. I still remember that. I wanted to meet them myself. So we had a gathering in Auckland at the Dalmatian Centre in the central city. And I walked into that room and realised that in that moment we had family members there together who had not been with other family members for decades. And I sensed in that moment the huge amount of emotion that still existed around Erebus. That process prompted letters, it prompted conversations. I met Captain Collins' family. I, as a consequence, read Privy Council reports, Mahon's report. I read all of the statements made at the time that the Mann Report was finally tabled in Parliament in 1999, and it all built a picture for me of unfinished business, and that wasn't right.
Did you approach Air New Zealand, or did the government approach Air New Zealand? Like, how did it come to pass for the 28th?
Yeah, so it was, you know, it was a conversation that, yes, we did start. And so as we were working on the memorial, and as I say, it became clear to me that if we as a government, and I use the word government in a broader term, not just this current government, but governments for a number of years accepted the Mann Report, and we do. Keeping in mind, of course, the Privy Council were at great pains to point out that it was only the language around and natural justice issues related to statements around Air New Zealand that they found against, but not the substantive report itself. So the report stood. The Mann Report stood. And yet, if you accept the Mann Report, and we do, that acknowledged that there was cause, a need, for there to be an apology, because it acknowledged the multiple failings, and particularly those that did fall at the feet of an airline owned by the New Zealand government. So in my mind, we had a responsibility. There'd been piecemeal apologies and piecemeal acknowledgements, but no one had actually said the words, "I'm sorry."
What did Air New Zealand say when you brought that to them?
There wasn't a sense of any resistance to that by any stretch. And, you know, they absolutely acknowledged that this was something that, you know, we were keen to do as a government. They didn't push back on that at all. And then the conversation really became, you know, what role should they play? You know, was it appropriate that it be us as ultimately the owner? My view was that for completeness, that Air New Zealand needed to be there too. I didn't know how the apology would be received, even at the moment that I was standing on the podium delivering it. I didn't know whether or not it would be something that even family members wanted to hear. I just knew it was finally the right thing to do. But I did have a strong sense that if it was done without Air New Zealand there, that it may feel incomplete, and I didn't want it to be yet another piecemeal incomplete acknowledgement.
How did you feel then on the podium?
It's hard to describe the emotion that was in that room. There were hundreds of family members there. And as I acknowledged and put on record again that this accident did not occur because of pilot error, that it was not their fault, I could see the Collins family, and I could see that had a significant impact. So that meant when it came to an apology part, I could see that there was... there were genuinely people in the room who did not expect it.
Why do you think nobody has done this before? I know you can't speak for them, but why don't you think anyone's done this before now?
I cannot answer that. I do not know.
Do you think someone should have before you?
Yes. You know, look, I do have to acknowledge that time, you know, time obviously changes a lot, but for those families, it changed absolutely nothing. If anything, you know, maybe all it did was it lead to the belief that it would never happen. But I honestly, I can't tell you. I can't speak for others, but I also do not know.
I just want to pick up before we move on a couple of things from the speech specifically. One of them that stood out to me when I read it was, and you mentioned this earlier, once you'd sort of given your summary of Chippendale Report, Mann Report, Court of Appeal and all of that, you came back to the Mann Report.
I did.
And you said those findings stood then and they stand now.
Yeah.
The pilots were not responsible for this tragedy.
Yes.
And I stand here today to state that again.
Yep.
Is that the government taking a position on the cause of the crash here, or are you just accepting the findings as submitted by the Royal Commissioner there?
Well, those were the findings. I mean, we've accepted the findings. And in fact, no one has, of course, I think, resolved from that apart from that. I think one of the things that was probably most striking for me was not only the huge contribution that Mann made by establishing the multiple factors, but by pointing out that actually there were some that were hugely significant amongst that list. And, of course, many credit him for, you know, the contribution he made to the future of investigations of this nature. But what is very clear from his report is his position on the pilots. And yet, you know, there's still this, for me, you know, when I was reading around the history of the time or seeing some of the commentary, of course, despite the fact that that was on record and that was never challenged, those substantive findings were not challenged, and yet in the back of some people's mind may still exist a hangover of Chippendale, and there's injustice in that. And so that was an opportunity to just restate what I felt should be restated.
Hi, it's Mike here. This part of the interview just needs a little clarification because it raises an issue that comes up a lot in the fallout from Erebus. The Prime Minister is correct in saying that the substantive findings of the Mann Report were never challenged. It's important to say, though, that those substantive findings, i.e. what caused the crash, they couldn't be challenged. You might remember when we talked about the Court of Appeal decision in Episode 5, we explained how a Royal Commission isn't a court. The findings aren't a verdict, so they can't be appealed. So when Air New Zealand contested the Mann Report on those natural justice and jurisdiction issues, that was through a judicial review, and it was about all they could really do. Whether they would have appealed the actual findings if they could have, and whether they would have won, are kind of moot points. But we do know there were a lot of people in Air New Zealand who disputed those conclusions as well. Okay, back to it. There will be some people, and I know there will because I've heard from some of them since, who don't agree with your apology on the 28th,
yeah,
because as they see, the pilots should take at least some responsibility for this crash. What would you say to those people?
Oh, Erebus will be forever an event in our history that will hold a huge weight, multiple different perspectives from multiple different people. All I think we had a responsibility to do was lighten the load. And we've tried to do that based on evidence. You know, Mann's report, it set out all of the different factors. But I think it was also very clear.
Did it weigh on you when you were reading that and considering whether or not to apologise as you did? Like maybe, should I do this? Is this
no.
the right thing to do? Or was it easy?
No, it was, you know, there was, I, you know, I'd, of course, should acknowledge I did this. The only anxiety I had was just whether or not I would be compounding any pain for anyone that had already gone through an enormous amount. You know, I had no desire to do that. I had no desire for anyone to feel it. We were relitigating things that they had found hugely traumatic. And so that, you know, I did have that anxiety. But as for the apology itself, I did not question that it was the right thing to do.
The one other part of your speech that I'd like to pick up on was the very last thing you said after Dame Therese Walsh had spoken.
Yeah.
Some say that the past is the past. We cannot change what happened. That fails to consider that our future is shaped by where we have come from. It is shaped by our response to tragedy and injustice and by the people who stand up against it. And then you go on, as we mark the 40th anniversary of an event that remains etched in New Zealand's psyche, we reflect on all that is lost, all that we must learn, and a future that we all must keep striving to make better. Do you think we've learned as we should have from Erebus and how to deal with tragedy?
I do. Yeah, I do.
I'm not sure we do. And I look at Cave Creek and Pike River and the earthquakes, particularly the CTV building, and I see all the disillusionment and the heartache that people suffered because of that, the people left behind suffered. And I just see us not dealing with these tragedies anywhere near as well as we should or could even. Do you disagree?
There are different elements of lessons here. Have we learned everything we need to learn about ensuring that anyone who goes to work can expect to ensure that their safety is a number one priority and that they return safely at the end of the day? There are still, as you say, lessons to be learned there. And I say that as we're still trying to re-enter Pike River. Have we learnt how to make sure that we care for people in the aftermath of tragedy, how to support one another, how to be open about our failings, inquire into them appropriately and make sure that we're transparent? I do think we've learnt lessons there. We are not perfect. No one can ever claim that. But we cannot keep learning these lessons in such a painful, horrific manner.
Can I just talk about the memorial briefly? Because a bit has happened since that was first announced, when you spoke to that earlier this year. Mm. Was it this year? Was it last year? It was April. Was it this year?
I feel like it might have been last year, but it must have been this. Was it this year? Forgive me.
April last year seems too far.
Anyway, it does. April.
Hey, Mike here again. The date neither of us can remember here is April 2019. April some year.
Yes.
When you said that, and a bit's happened since then. There's been some protests and some opposition to that and some controversy out of that. There's another, as you'll know, there's another delay with the application being lodged. Finally, how do you feel about this now? You've spoken a lot about that then and just now. Would you like to see it go ahead? How do you feel about what's happened since?
I remain absolutely committed to creating a memorial. The time has come. There are some things that we need to work through, obviously. Look, we've done our bit, with the Ministry of Arts, Culture and Heritage, and then we're reliant on really the local board side of that process and their engagement with the community and so on. I believe we'll find a way through, but surely there'll be consensus that the time has come. Mm.
Lastly, as someone who we mentioned in the podcast wasn't born when Erebus happened, as I wasn't, and a lot of people who I think listened to it weren't born or certainly aren't old enough to have a well-formed memory of it, what does it mean to you?
I think it's one of those things that shaped New Zealand in many, many ways. It's, etched in the collective memory of many. And at some points when I was working through all of the different statements that have been given, there was often the sentiment included within it that, people wanted to let sleeping dogs lie. They didn't wish to dredge up the past. And that's why, for me, that reference at the end of the apology, the past is never just the past. Erebus impacted people forever. And I think we had a duty to acknowledge that until we did what needed to be done and acknowledged that impact and also what was unsaid, I feel like we were never giving people a place to put down their grief. And I think that was our job. Regardless of whether I was born, I feel the impact of Erebus on New Zealand.
Did you know anyone? Did you have a family friend connection to it at all?
No, I didn't. And in fact, it feels relatively rare. But actually, I have heard my parents talk about knowing people. I've collected many, many stories since being in this role, since working on the memorial, since working on the apology. One in particular on the day of the apology, a gentleman shared with me that he was at the terminal that day and he still remembers a young man there waiting for his girlfriend playing his guitar. Simple memories that I think have really changed people's lives forever.
Do you think, or do you hope even, that this might not draw a line through the Erebus controversy, what's happened in your speech on the 40th anniversary, but do you think it might go some way to helping get there?
I think regardless, I cannot assume or begin to assume what will give people, loath to use the word, because I don't know that you ever get closure or any sense of that from something like Erebus. I just wanted to give people a space where they could put down their grief. There'd been so many blockages to that. Too many people had to fight too hard for too long to get basic recognition of some really important facts. And that, I think, had really prevented people just being able to grieve. So if after 40 years we could do one thing, we could do that.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No. I think that. Thank you for reading the statement. I pondered a lot on those words.
Did you write it yourself?
Yes, I did. Substantively, there were some elements that I went through quite carefully with some agencies' versions of it that I just disagreed with and rewrote substantively, but predominantly it was my words.
Cool. Hey, thank you for this, Jacinda. That's great.
No worries. Thank you.
We're done now, so yeah.
Cheers.
So that's potentially the last chapter in the Erebus story, but we will be back. Remember, we're hosting a live show of White Silence in Christchurch in January as part of the Bread and Circus Buskers Festival. It's a panel discussion, so we'll have some special guests, and Michael and I will both be there to talk about how we made the podcast and answer your questions as well. It's free, but you do need a ticket to get in. Go to breadandcircus.co.nz/white silence for more details. Thanks for listening.
White Silence is a joint production by Stuff and RNZ, written, presented and produced by Katie Gossett and me, Michael Wright. Our executive producers are Justin Gregory and Tim Watkin for RNZ, and for Stuff, Carol Hirschfeld, Keith Lynch, John Hartevelt, Carmela Heyman and Adam Dudding also helped produce this podcast. This episode was engineered by Alex Harmer. You can subscribe to the full 8-part series at Apple Podcasts, Spotify and other podcast providers. You can also go to the Stuff and RNZ homepages to listen or get details on how to subscribe. If you enjoyed this, you can check out other Stuff and RNZ podcasts like Gone Fishing, Killjoy, Black Hands, The District, or New Zealand Wars.